are so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
You know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, September the 4th, 2015. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our co-hosts, Alyssa Ray.
Hi there.
And Elise Jacobson.
Hi.
Amir and Jackie are away today. Welcome, everyone. Today's show is about using the law to give animals the justices they deserve. Our first interview today is with Jordan Reinhart. If his name sounds familiar, it's because we have had him on the show before. He's an animal activist based in Victoria who heads up the Critical Cat and the Vancouver Island Vegan Association. He's been instrumental in working on various animal rights issues in Victoria, and now he is delving into politics and running for the position of Victoria MP in the October 19th Canadian federal election, representing the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada. On the show today, he'll be telling us about this political party for the animals and what he hopes to achieve if elected. Then for our feature interview, we'll have Natalie Prosen of the U.S.-based organization called the Non-Human Rights Project on the show, which is striving to change the common law status of at least some non-human animals from mere things to persons who possess such fundamental rights as bodily integrity and bodily liberty. We had the president of this organization, Stephen Wise, on the show a few years ago to tell us about their plans for the future at that time as they were about to embark on their first case to gaining personhood rights for an animal. This past year has been busy for the Non-Human Rights Project as they have been involved in fighting for the rights of several chimpanzees named Leo, Hercules, Kiko, and Tommy. Natalie will be here on the show today to give us an update on their latest work on these cases.
So there was just something we wanted to talk about. I'm one of the moderators of the Vancouver Vegans group on Facebook. And sometimes members will post in the group with questions of a more philosophical nature. And we had a question recently from a member about how other folks in the group deal with having friends who are non-vegan. And basically, you know, in other words, having friends who don't share your values or who you know actively participate in violence toward animals. So, you know, he was kind of asking, like, you know, is having friends who are non-vegan tacit approval of their lifestyle, or is it good for us to kind of be around non-vegans to, you know, just sort of influence them by being who we are and living compassionately and eating wonderful food and doing all these wonderful things. I was hoping we could talk a little bit about that, the three of us. For me, I think that's a tough question. I see the point that he's making. Obviously, it's difficult sometimes to be around people who don't share your values. And yeah, sometimes being friends, you know, kind of does imply that you don't care about that, or you just sort of tacitly approve of their lifestyle. At the same time, I feel like I personally am more in the camp of, you know, it is good to be around people who maybe are not aware of these issues yet, so that we can educate them and not even necessarily be actively doing outreach toward them all the time, but just sort of, you know, living the way that we live and influencing them in that way. And so I wanted to ask the two of you what you thought about that.
I think we're very lucky to live here in Vancouver, where you can kind of choose to have only vegan friends. So I think we're privileged in that way. But I think most of the world, most places aren't like that. So unless you want to live so socially isolated from people, the people who are going to be your friends, assuming you have friends, are going to be non-vegans, right?
Absolutely.
So I don't think it's healthy to be socially isolated. Mm-hmm. And I feel that it's a good opportunity to reach out to people, not by, you know, preaching to them, by always talking about veganism and that, because maybe that's, I think that can get kind of maybe boring for non-vegans to be hearing all the time. So yeah. I don't advocate that necessarily, but more than as just living an example and leading by example and living the lifestyle, and people seeing how you're living and being like a shining example for the vegan lifestyle and for animal advocacy.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree.
Yeah, it's difficult to maintain friendships sometimes because the awkward conversations come up.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, for me, what's been the most successful thing is to actually, like, inside say, okay, if they never change, like, this is just them as they are, like, making their choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, like, have this constant, like, feeling like that I wish that they would change.
Right.
Like, it's like, you know, if someone has, you know, issues with alcohol or, you know, is dealing with other issues or something, I'm not like, oh, I only want to be your friend when you get over that. Or mm-hmm. like maybe if it's destroying, you know, if it's like really troublesome. But I don't know, I have to almost give people a pass
mm-hmm.
that are close to me and that like family and longtime friends that I've had. Like,
yeah.
I just have to give them a pass and maybe one day they will, but I can't ever like... I can't just keep hoping. Like, I just have to be like, this is them. This is their choices. Can I accept it or not?
Mm-hmm.
If I can't, you know, then I can't be their friend anymore. I can't keep that pressure on them all the time.
Right.
So I have to just choose, like, is this friendship worth, you know, worth something to me? And do I want to keep it? Or is this tension going to keep getting in the way of our friendship? And then, yeah, just like it's a choice. Some friendships you might let go of because they're not really that deeply valuable.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you make new friendships. But other ones, like, yeah, I don't know. And it just goes so deep, like the indoctrination that we have to eat meat and have
yeah.
to eat dairy. Like, we've been told since we were, like, very young. And I've gone through this very, you know, rigorous process of mind letting go of these ideas.
Yeah,
and not everyone is up for that, like, huge, you know, life change
right.
at this point.
I did want to mention something about that too, because I think that's a really important point. I think it's a little, you know, in the discussion on the Facebook group, there was some comparison to, you know, what if you had friends who oppressed other human beings in other ways? And I think that, you know, I see why that comparison is made. There are a lot of parallels, but at the same time, it's more complicated. I think we live in a society, you know, a capitalist system that's very bound up in animal agriculture, and it's something that some of us can avoid fairly easily, but not everyone can necessarily avoid very easily. And so, yeah, I think it's not necessarily super black and white. It's complicated for a lot of people. And you know, at the same time, not to say that people should be, you know, just given a pass necessarily for
yeah.
that. But
I think there is, though, like a difference between like maybe someone who owns a farm and works on a farm and is killing animals actively.
Right.
Would I want to be friends with that person still? Probably not.
Yeah.
Or someone who owned a puppy mill or something like
yeah.
that. Like there is kind of this like buying products. It is connected, but it is kind of one step removed. And
right.
like people just don't see the connection. So it's
right. People don't see it.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It's not right in front of your face. And I think a lot of people still don't really know what goes on. And so it can be a question of just, okay, they need this information, right?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that. I'm sure we could talk about that a lot more. Maybe we will in the future. Alyssa, you have something for us.
I do, actually. So there is a local sanctuary called Hearts on Noses that's based in Mission, which is a suburb of Vancouver. And I saw a call out this morning from the operator, Janice Gillett. She's been the sole operator of this pig sanctuary since 1999. And Hearts on Noses is currently home to more than 40 pigs, including pot-bellied pigs and some bigger ones that were destined to become food, as well as a horse and a cat and two dogs and a turtle. So Janice put a call out on social media this morning just saying how much she's really struggling and Yeah, so I'm encouraging people to visit the website, heartsonnoses.com, and find out how you can donate. Regular monthly donations, I think, are, you know, the most appreciated. If you can afford $10, $15, $20 a month, it really goes a long way to supporting Janice and the pigs there. And Hearts on Noses is 100% funded by donations and grants. And Hearts on Noses is a place where animals have found refuge from the harsh world that sees them as little more than property. And there they get to live out the rest of their lives in love and safe from harm.
Hello, darlings. Sean Treviel here for Fruit Salad. Join us every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. for community news and events, live performances and music, fantastic guests, and just general fabulousness that you'd find in a fruit salad. Support your community radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. There's nothing else like this in Vancouver or in the world. Listen in.
Now for events. This is from Vancouver Animal Defense League. It was posted on their Facebook page the other day. Winter is coming and our fur campaign is starting this Saturday, September 5th. That's tomorrow. Join us for our first demo tomorrow against Alpine Start, a Canada Goose retailer. For those who don't know, Canada Goose is a company that makes coats, winter coats, that are stuffed with cruel goose feathers and trimmed with coyote fur. Has asked them to transition to fur-free outerwear and they have refused, so now they're protesting. The protest will be at Alpine Start tomorrow, 68 West Broadway, from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. And this is a really great campaign, they mentioned, because Alpine Start is within two blocks of at least four other outerwear stores that don't sell fur, so it's easy to get customers to take their business elsewhere. And on Sunday, this coming Sunday, there's the Rally for Rakesh at the Greater Vancouver Zoo. This will be happening also at 11 a.m. this coming Sunday. Rakesh was a red panda, an endangered red panda, who died recently of a fungal infection at the Greater Vancouver Zoo after being acquired over the summer to fill their new red panda enclosure. And already the Greater Vancouver Zoo is unloading their responsibility by claiming that the infections occurred before the red panda's arrival, despite the quarantine and vet checks that would have detected signs of illnesses. So Liberate GV Zoo Animals asks, join us in speaking the truth that captivity of wild animals is inherently cruel. Rakesh was killed by the stress of being a captive animal, being transferred and displayed as a commodity inside depressing environments. So again, that protest is at the Greater Vancouver Zoo in Langley, in Aldergrove, sorry, on Sunday at 11 a.m.
Awesome. And coming up around the corner, September 13th, Sunday, September 13th, that is, there is a new documentary called Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. It's a nonprofit documentary, art in action. And there's a free screening, actually, at the downtown Vancouver Library. Oh, no, it's not free. It's $10. But it goes to support the filmmaker. And, yeah, it looks really exciting. And afterwards, they're going to have a Q&A session with an expert panel. So Sarah Blythe, former Park Board Commissioner, will be there, as well as Rebecca Breeder, animal law lawyer, Dr. Lawrence Dill, a biologist and professor, and Dr. Jeff Matthews, a conservationist and writer. And the first screening of the film in Vancouver sold out, and the second one is coming up. Don't miss it. It's going to be very controversial, and there's a lot in it that really uncovers, like, what's happening at the Vancouver Aquarium. Is it really the, you know, the do-gooder nonprofit that it claims to be? Are they really rescuing cetaceans and other beings there? So you do have to register your seats there. You can email evotioninc@gmail.com or just check out the event. Just check out Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered on Facebook, the event there. Yeah. So it looks like a really great film. I can't wait to see it. Again, that's Sunday, September 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the downtown Vancouver Library.
For our first interview today, we have Victoria animal activist and now politician Jordan Reichart, who comes to us as a running candidate in the October 19th federal election as a member of the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada. He is here on the show today to tell us more about the AAEV and his intentions and insights on what our government should be doing to act for the animals. Hello, Jordan, and welcome back to the Animal Voices show.
Thanks, Allison, for having me again. It's great to be here.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show today, Jordan, to speak about your current endeavor in working for the animals. So what is the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada? Can you tell us about that to start?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we are Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada. It was formed in 2005. Essentially, it was a combination of Animal Alliance and environment voters, two separate groups in Canada, and they came together to represent animal issues at the political level because at the time there was, and there still is, limitations on political advocacy during election periods. And so, you know, their purpose is to hold the other parties accountable for their platforms, for their policies, as it regards to the protection and improvement of the quality of life for non-human animals. And, you know, to challenge them during election period and to challenge them afterwards as well, whoever is the party that perhaps wins or otherwise.
Well, you're heavily involved already in the animal activism scene in Victoria. Can you talk to us about why you've decided to put on the hat now of a politician and why you think it's important for change for the animals to be made on a federal governmental level in Canada?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that animal activism and advocacy are strange kind of bedfellows in Canadian politics. We're used to working outside the system and advocating through nonprofit organizations or various public interest groups. To some extent, this is the way to go. Changing public opinion from the outside is more likely to, of course, embolden lawmakers and politicians to make positive change for non-human animals within that system. However, one of the major problems with this route is that the message can become very insulated, often through social media or however it is. It circulates within the same groups of people and becomes a bit stale. And we're not quite getting through to the politicians and not making them speak about these issues. So in conjunction with the message being circulated in, of course, vegan and animal liberation or rights or welfare organizations and their various subcultures, we need to get the discussion about animal rights, liberation, and veganism out to a larger demographic. And in my opinion, to do this, we need platforms that hold people with decision-making power on these issues accountable, which is the federal election and party stage. I think one of the primary problems in Canadian politics is that all the mainstream parties are silent on animal issues, even if they have good policies in these areas, which, you know, some of the parties right now do, and I mean, some of the parties have put forward bills that are still sitting in the House just at first reading for the last 4 years that just aren't going through, aren't moving forward. But it's not a priority for these political parties, and they often see it as a very divisive issue. So if they don't speak about these issues, then they don't exist in the public's mind. And so we must force dialogue on these issues whenever possible. I believe Canadians care about animal issues, but the political silence on these issues continues to kill them by inaction.
Well, can you talk to us about what some of the major issues are that are facing the animals in Canada today?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is an interesting question because I don't really make a distinction between policy that is positive for other animals and policy that is positive for humans. They, you know, really complement each other and are not mutually exclusive. However, you know, one of the items I would want to address is separation of wildlife and the environment in the different ministries as it currently exists. This is really an ineffective way of dealing with what is essentially a biosphere with wildlife embedded in it. And to exclude wildlife from any discussion on environmental protection is ignorant of this relationship. Furthermore, in tandem with that, to protect this natural habitat, it would be part of our mandate to phase out and eliminate the killing of wild animals and plants. This would include an end to hunting, trapping, phishing and lethal wildlife management programs, such as poisoning and culling, that, of course, is taking place locally with wolf calls, deer calls, across the province, geese calls, and across Canada as well. I'd like to see non-human animals given appropriate recognition, not just sentient beings in Canada, but also as persons, and establish government bodies to develop policy that represents their best interests and enforce their protection. I'd like to see the elimination of the domestic breeding of animals for all purposes, from agriculture to experimentation, as well as an establish a nationwide educational campaign on spay and neuter programs to begin addressing the significant societal burden of domestic violence against animals and their overpopulation, which, of course, is overrunning shelters constantly and is a huge drain on resources and, of course, is emotionally distressing for people as well who work with those organizations. And, of course, I'd also like to see the end of animals being used in entertainment, whether it be horse-drawn carriages, rodeos, aquariums, such as the Vancouver Aquarium, which you were just mentioning, or zoo exhibitions.
So let's chat a little bit about that last one you mentioned, ending the exploitation of animals in entertainment, such as at the Vancouver Aquarium and the horse-drawn carriages, which are there in your city in Victoria. Those are two that are more close to home and have been a lot in the news lately, and animal activists are all over it. So I'm wondering, like, what do you foresee in the future, and especially if the Animal Alliance Environment Party, Voters Party of Canada can be involved, what do you see in the future happening?
Yeah, well, I think there definitely are, like I mentioned, that there are bills currently in place in the House of Commons that, you know, are moving towards representing non-human animals as both sentient beings, but also taking them out of the realm of property offenses when it comes to the Criminal Code of Canada, and making them, making animal cruelty a separate section in itself. And I think when you do that, when you recognize animals as persons, when you recognize them as sentient beings that are obviously capable of feeling and enjoying life and have desires, then there has to be, it's the beginning of a societal shift in how we can use other animals, and getting away from the idea that we can use other animals for entertainment or experimentation or whatever it is. I mean, these are extremely, I mean, just antiquated forms of entertainment. I mean, there's no reason why we need horse-drawn carriages in any of our cities across Canada. There's no reason why rodeos need to still be going on, except for the industries that continue to support them. There's no reason for aquariums such as the Vancouver Aquarium to be turn the animals that they care for, that they rescue, into basically sideshows for the public, which really does nothing to educate them. You know, in terms of them being a real rehabilitation center, great. You know, we need that, right? We need rehabilitation. We need return to sea programs for the marine life that is rescued. But, you know, the exhibition of them is completely unacceptable.
Well, you've said that the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada is more than just non-human animals. Can you tell us what you mean by that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're absolutely not a single-issue party, which is something that is difficult to get across to people sometimes. We usually talk about animal issues first because it is an important aspect of our campaign that really sets us apart. But it is the way we see animal issues as enmeshed in all aspects of society that we make those connections. So, you know, animals are the most marginalized, exploited, and abused group in society today. If we set their treatment as the worst we can do to an individual or group, then improving their protection and power has the potential of improving what is acceptable to all within other groups in society in turn, because no one has less power than animals today in Canada. For example, many people who are, you know, when people ask, you know, well, how is this all tied together, many people who are concerned about the environment really don't think about how protecting wildlife is inextricably linked to protecting, concerned about other animals is linked to protecting the environment. In fact, if you think about protections we often afford our own communities to not be exploited. These same principles apply to the communities of wildlife and their habitat. If people don't support the Northern Gateway Pipeline because of the potential environmental impact, that is one thing. However, if those proper protections are in place for the animals within this environment and they have the appropriate representation, a pipeline of this nature would not be possible. Beyond that, of course, we also, I mean, to address, to get away from, you know, tying, I guess, these issues into, you know, animal issues, another aspect is to look at, you know, we want to push for a preventative health care system rather than a disease treatment system, so one that's progressive and not just reactionary to when people are sick, but actually educates people and encourages them to live healthy, plant-based lives before, you know, that can prevent illness down the road. We want education that is accessible to all and that is tuition-free and move away from the corporatization of our academic institutions, which is, of course, making them incredibly biased in the information that is communicated to students who attend these institutions and of course, their ideologies as they leave those institutions. Move away from a neoliberal capitalist model of constant growth to a steady-state economy. This is also very important for us because we don't think you can talk about the environment. We can't talk about the use of other animals in intensive factory farming industries without talking about capitalism, without talking about the need to address these concerns and instead moving to a steady-state economy where what we're putting in is also basically equal to what we're getting out. And we're looking for a way not to always be obsessed with getting the means of, but focusing on the ends of improving the lives of people and their outcomes and the conditions from which they come from. And of course, a guaranteed basic income is a part of that for all, regardless of their ability, so that all may contribute to society and not have the means to their ends stripped from them so that they can't participate.
Hi, Jordan. Elise here. You said that we need a revolution of mind on how our society perceives non-human animals, and you did elaborate on that a little bit earlier, just mentioning how seeing animals as sentient beings who have their own desires and are worthy of moral consideration. I was wondering if you could tell us more about that and how a party like the AAEV could break into the mainstream to facilitate this revolution of mind.
Yeah, so, you know, when I said we need a revolution of mind, you know, this is really undermining, I guess, the current anthropocentric view that our society currently functions on and the framework upon which so much of Canada has been built on. While that may have served a colonial vision for Canada, it is time to escape this, you know, neocolonial reliance on and exploitation of non-human animals and of course, marginalized peoples within our human communities as well. This must be really precipitated by a revolution of mind that does not talk about societal issues in a violent way that is isolating and that neglects the whole, but instead empowers and emerges, you know, truths from all different places, right? So it empowers people to speak and participate, and that weaves like a blanket of progress. Right now, progress is generally interpreted in a modernistic sort of linear fashion. So you can just kind of envision an arrow on a steady incline. And that's what it's supposed to always be, the direction it's always supposed to be heading. But, you know, we seldom talk about who or what does this arrow represent. Does it represent the progress of men at the expense of women and transgender people? Does it represent humanity at the expense of non-human animals in the environment? Does it represent the most wealthy and privileged at the exclusion of the most marginalized? Instead, what if progress was perceived as a kind of an ocean of equal interest instead? As the level of one rises, all others rise together, and we don't kind of go up without the others also coming up with us. So being inclusionary of other animals in our consideration of how we eat, live, are entertained, and behave in general is the only way we can understand the complex, you know, processes that are embedded in socially and biologically in our society and take positive steps to resist discrimination, violence, and oppression, wherever it manifests right now.
Well, thank you, Jordan, for coming on the show today to speak about the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada and your candidacy in running for Victoria MP in the October 19th federal election. To find out more about Jordan and his platform, you can visit jordanreichart.ca. You can also find a link to that at our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And to find out more about the party itself, you can visit their site at environmentvoters.org. Thanks, Jordan, and have a great day.
Thank you so much. Take care.
And now for the news. The groundbreaking documentary Cowspiracy was recently acquired by Netflix. A new cut of it will be executive produced by Leonardo DiCaprio, and it will debut on Netflix globally on September 15th. The film is a controversial look at the animal agriculture industry and explores how its practices are largely to blame for global warming, water depletion, deforestation, species extinction, and ocean dead zones. Filmmaker Kip Anderson was the brainchild behind the doc and later recruited Keegan-Kuhn to help him make the movie. The duo interviewed dozens of environmental activists, some of whom were routinely threatened for speaking out, and the film also exposes the curious way in which many environmental organizations have neglected or avoided mentioning the importance of animal agriculture in environmental devastation.
Another quick note about a documentary I wanted to mention. CBC showed Safe Haven for Chimps last night, and now it's available online for Canadians. It's a film about Chimp Haven, which is down south in the U.S., and it's a sanctuary that was founded after a landmark decision in the U.S. to retire 300 federally owned chimps. It's a beautiful film that talks about, you know, the challenges of the sanctuary and, you know, our relationship with chimpanzees and, you know, why we still test on them and what should be done with all the, you know, the chimps that are in currently being exploited for science or for other reasons. So check out Safe Haven for Chimps. And a few other news stories here. In Taiji, the dolphin hunting season is nigh. And yesterday it was announced that animal rights activist Rick O'Berry was arrested in Japan. Rick is well known for his appearance in the Oscar-winning documentary The Cove. And so Japanese authorities said he was arrested for allegedly failing to carry his passport. Sea Shepherd is saying that security in Japan is high. Apparently Japanese authorities are denying entry to anti-whaling demonstrators at the airports. There's a high police presence around Taiji. And yeah, I think that it's a minor infraction. Rick will get out of jail soon. But just news there. Across the world in the UK, it was reported, a big article in the UK Mirror today. Today, the badger kill starts there. And there's a big article about how much it is costing taxpayers and how little sense it makes. Apparently the cost for killing one badger in the UK is about $15,000 or, you know, 7,500 pounds per animal. Last year, 580 badgers were killed in the UK, which cost nearly $9 million. I don't understand, really. The kill occurs supposedly to stop the spread of bovine tuberculosis, but the science on that really isn't strong at all. And people are saying that it would cost less than half of that total to just vaccinate and monitor the badgers, and that they're actually not, you know, the main cause of the spread of tuberculosis is just moving the cows around and having them in high concentrations. Mm-hmm. The International Fund for Animal Welfare says that the kill is irrational. They say not only is the badger call a disastrous failure in scientific and animal welfare grounds, it's also a huge burden on the taxpayer. And finally, I wanted to quickly mention the story that was making rounds that you probably saw. There's a big article in Washington Post and other places. World's woolliest sheep gets a life-saving trim. So a hiker in Australia found a sheep whose wool had grown so large that it was a massive burden on him. Apparently, it looks like he had left his flock 5 or 6 years ago and was kind of hiding out in the wild. And he was so overgrown he could barely see and had difficulty walking. So the hiker called for help, and the rogue sheep was caught and sedated and shorn. 90 pounds of wool was shorn from this this poor guy. And the article was interesting. I mean, it's just kind of bringing attention to the issue of wool. And I like that the article in the Washington Post reminded readers that wild sheep shed their coats every year. It's humans who have bred them to keep growing so that we can exploit them for their wool. And this is like merino wool, you may have heard, is where there's a popular practice in Australia for these to get this merino wool, because they breed these sheep to have more skin. So they cut off their skin with no anesthetic if they get infections, and flies lay eggs between their skin folds. And it's like really gross. And people just think that wool is like not so bad and not harmful at all. And I like that this article was a little reminder that, you know, that we maybe just shouldn't be messing with sheep and like... And that they're suffering. So yeah.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Our feature interview today is with Natalie Prosen, who is the Executive Director of the Non-Human Rights Project. The mission of the Non-Human Rights Project is to change the common law status of at least some non-human animals from mere things, which lack the capacity to possess any legal right, to persons who possess such fundamental rights as bodily integrity and bodily liberty, and those other legal rights to which evolving standards of morality, scientific discovery, and human experience entitle them. The Non-Human Rights Project has been busy this year in trying to have the status of personhood granted to the chimpanzees Leo and Hercules, as well as to Kiko and Tommy. And Natalie is here today to tell us about the latest progress and the work that they are doing for the animals. Hello, Natalie, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Natalie, today to give us an update on your work. The last time we had your organization on the show was 2.5 years ago, and a lot has happened since then with the Non-Human Rights Project. To start, though, for our listeners who aren't familiar with the Non-Human Rights Project, can you tell us a bit about the mandate of your organization, when it started, and the type of work that you've been doing?
Sure. So the Non-Human Rights Project was started in the mid-90s by Stephen Wise, who is an attorney and one of the co-founders of the Animal Legal Defense Fund, which is an animal law organization in the United States. And he left the Animal Legal Defense Fund to really try to figure out how to change the legal status of non-human animals in the U.S. legal system. So as some of your listeners might be familiar with, animals are considered property and are therefore considered legal things. And so what the purpose of the Non-Human Rights Project is to try to change their status from thing to legal person. And so back in 2007, after years of theorizing and writing about how to do this, Stephen Wise got going with the organization, and we have been going ever since and developing our long-term litigation campaign.
So please tell us about Leo and Hercules and what you've been trying to do for them. I know it's a big story.
Yes, with lots of just different twists and turns in this case. So Hercules and Leo are two young male chimpanzees that are being used for non-medical research at a university in New York. And we filed our first cases on behalf of all of the chimpanzees that we could find in New York State back in 2013. And like I just mentioned, our case on behalf of Hercules and Leo has taken many different turns since then. But most recently, this year in April of 2015, a judge issued what's known as an order to show cause under New York's habeas corpus statute. And so let me just back up for 1 second. So part of our strategy is to use what's known as the writ of habeas corpus, in which we petition court with this cause of action to demand that the person that is holding our petitioners, so our chimpanzee petitioners, captive into court so that we can argue whether or not these chimpanzee petitioners should be considered legal things or should be considered legal persons. So in April of this year, a judge ordered, issued an order to show cause, and she brought the university into her courtroom, basically shifting the burden, and asked the university, Hercules and Leo Castes, to provide a legally justifiable reason as to why the university was holding them captive. And during this 2-hour hearing, we were able to get to very substantive arguments as to whether or not Hercules and Leo should be considered more than legal things and should be considered legal persons with the fundamental right to bodily liberty. So just a few weeks ago in July, the judge finally made her decision. And unfortunately, she concluded that she was bound by another court's ruling in one of our other cases, and so she was not able to release Hercules and Leo from their imprisonment. However, on every other ground, mostly procedural grounds, we won. So that was a real first for us. Now, the day after the decision came out, the university announced that they would be ending their experimentation on Hercules and Leo. And ever since that day, we have been in deep negotiations with them and the owners of the chimpanzees, which is a research laboratory in Louisiana, New Iberia Research Center, to have them transferred to Save the Chimp Sanctuary in Florida.
So there has been a success there, at least for getting them liberated. But I'm wondering...
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
That has not happened yet. We're
right.
Still in the negotiation phase right now, mm-hmm. So the case has not been settled. But we're very hopeful that we'll be able to reach a positive conclusion for Hercules and Leo.
Yeah, this is these cases are definitely not something that just, just happens overnight and their success, that's for sure. So you've been working on a couple of other cases this year. They are on behalf of Kiko and Tommy. Can you tell us about Kiko and Tommy? Who are they in? What are the situations they are currently living in?
Sure. So the last time we saw Tommy, Tommy is a chimpanzee that we believe was once exploited in the entertainment industry. And the last time we saw him, he was living in a cage in a warehouse on a used trailer lot in upstate New York. And Kiko is a chimpanzee that was once used in the entertainment industry, like we believe Tommy was. And he is now living in somebody's house in Niagara Falls as basically his pet. So both of those cases were filed right around the same time within a few days of each other in 2013. And they went through the trial court level and up to the intermediate appellate court level in New York. And just this week, we had appealed those cases to the highest court level in New York, the Court of Appeals, and we found out that the Court of Appeals would not be hearing our appeals. So right now we are kind of reconfiguring the cases a bit, tweaking our arguments, and we'll probably be refiling these cases all over again at the trial court level.
Can you explain why it was this week that High Court in New York had denied your appeal? Like, they won't listen to the appeal. I don't understand that. If you could just shed some light on what that's about.
Sure. So the highest court in New York, almost like all high courts in the United States and the U.S. Supreme Court, hear very few cases. I think, for example, the U.S. Supreme Court gets petitioned every year by thousands of cases, and they only hear 80. And that's basically because of lack of resources, lack of time. There's only so many judges that are on the panel. And so on Tuesday, the New York Court of Appeals issued basically a 13-page document that listed all of the cases they would cases were on that list. So we don't know precisely why they decided not to hear our cases. They don't issue any sort of discussion on that. They just denied to hear it, along with hundreds of others that had been petitioned.
Can you talk to us a little bit about habeas corpus and what the origins of that is and how you are hoping, how you have been applying it to these cases that you're working on with non-human animals?
Sure. So habeas corpus is an ancient cause of action that one files on behalf of somebody that's being imprisoned, and it's filed on behalf of that person, and they believe that that person is being held illegally or held unjustly. And if a judge issues the habeas corpus petition, then that calls into court the person, the captor, the person imprisoning the other individual into the courtroom to explain themselves, to explain why they're holding that individual in custody. And if they can't show good grounds for doing that, then the person is released from imprisonment. And this cause of action has been used for hundreds of years by many individuals to grant their own freedom. So it's been used by slaves and women and children and people in mental institutions. And so we're kind of following in the path of others that have used habeas corpus, and we're using that particular strategy for our petitioners.
Well, I know that one argument against these cases in trying to grant these animals personhood is that some people say that these animals should be protected under animal welfare laws instead. What do you have to say to that?
Right. So in our cases right now on behalf of Tommy, Kiko, Hercules, and Leo, we are not alleging that these chimpanzees, that the owners of these chimpanzees or the folks that are holding them captive are violating any such animal protection laws. And that's basically the point, is that in New York State, you're allowed to keep a chimpanzee in a cage, in a warehouse, in solitary confinement, and that's legally okay to do. We believe that given how cognitively complex these species are, that their autonomy should be protected and that they should be able to live their lives as chimpanzees in a sanctuary that is most appropriate for them.
So why have you chosen chimpanzees this time around? Do you consider them to be specifically good candidates to be granted personhood of all the non-human animals out there?
Yes, so our organization, the Non-Human Rights Project, focuses on all four species of great apes, so chimpanzees, gorillas, orangutans, bonobos, elephants, both Asian and African, and certain cetaceans, so orcas, bottlenose dolphins, beluga whales. And the reason that we're focusing on these species of animals is because they are so extraordinarily cognitively complex that we can prove in a court of law how advanced they are cognitively and that they're autonomous beings. And what our research has shown over the years is that in granting others legal rights, judges have put a great deal of emphasis on whether another individual has autonomy. And so for us to make these kinds of arguments, we support our legal arguments with hundreds of pages of affidavits filed by scientists that speak to the complexities of these species.
So when these animals, or hoping they are granted the status of personhood and thus bodily liberty, what will this mean for them, and what would you predict in the future for all other animals? Because certainly this would be precedent-setting, and I'm just wondering, like, what needs to happen in the court system to get the first case to be successful in what you're asking for, and thus perhaps create a huge snowball effect of many other successful court cases to happen in the future, and then just perhaps then just maybe just a change of a mind of how animals are seen in their status.
Right. So ultimately, we want our current petitioners to be transferred to a sanctuary that most resemble the wilds of Africa, where they belong. in the future, when we file more lawsuits, and we're currently preparing a lawsuit on behalf of one or more elephants, you know, we would have to evaluate where they originated, where the species originated, if they're captive-born or wild-born. Ultimately, we'd love to return our petitioners to the wild, but that may not be likely given the individual circumstances of each petitioner. And I think you had a whole lot more of your question that I'm now forgetting.
So yeah, I guess just the big picture is, like, how does this even happen? Because I just see this as being a huge shift in the court system. I don't know law very well. I mean, just from being an average person with average knowledge of what, like, I can't even fathom what needs to happen. Because once this happens, it's setting a precedent. And then every animal is going to have personhood. Or how does that work? Like, where is the line in the court of law drawn, or in law? Like, how does this even get going, and then what happens?
Right, so it'll get going by us filing these lawsuits, and all it takes is basically one judge to agree with our argument. And as far as it pertains to the floodgates argument that you're bringing up, it's not that If we were to win our cases tomorrow, that every non-human animal will be released from cages and released from captivity. That's really not how it works. Instead, we have to go state by state, animal by animal, filing these kinds of lawsuits, because we have to prove on an individual by individual basis that these particular species deserve bodily liberty.
Okay, and then, see, that sort of blows my mind as well. It's like, which particular species are you specifically fighting for? Like, what, for now, at least?
Right, so we're focusing on all four species of great apes, mm-hmm. elephants, and cetaceans. And again, that's because we have the scientific evidence to match our legal argument.
Okay, and then some people are asking, well, like, they're asking, should animals have human rights? They're perceiving these court cases as being, as your, and I've seen this in how the media, mainstream media, has been reporting this, is they're perceiving this as you fighting for them to have human rights, being that being personhood. People are saying they're not persons, they're animals. So what do you say to that?
Sure. So there's a big difference between the word legal person and what people often confuse as people or human being. A legal person is not a synonym for being human, and it's really not even a biological concept. It's a legal term of art. And it basically means, legal personhood basically means that you have the capacity for legal rights. In the United States, for example, corporations are considered legal persons. Obviously, corporations are not human beings. So we're not trying to get human rights for our petitioners. We're trying to get chimpanzee rights for chimpanzees. So I think that's probably one of the biggest misunderstandings out there about what we're trying to do. So, for instance, I have an infinite number of legal rights. It would be almost impossible to list them all. But what we're asking for our chimpanzee petitioners, is just one basic fundamental legal right, and that's the right to bodily liberty.
Well, thank you for that clarification. We have just about 1 minute left here. Finally, what can our listeners do to support the work of the Non-Human Rights Project?
Well, I think, you know, going on to our website and reading more about our arguments and our strategy would be very helpful And as people start discussing these ideas of legal personhood, I think there's such a misunderstanding out there about certain concepts that we're arguing for. And obviously, you know, we're a very small organization, and the more funds that we have, the more cases we can file. And we would like to be have cases all over the country and all over the world on behalf of non-human animals.
Well, thank you, Natalie, for coming on the show today to speak about the latest work of the Non-Human Rights Project in attempting to grant the status of personhood and thus bodily liberty to the chimpanzees Kiko, Tommy, Leo, and Hercules this past year. For more information on the work of the Non-Human Rights Project, you can visit nonhumanrightsproject.org. Thanks, Natalie. Have a great day.
Thank you so much.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 100.5 FM CFRO. We are broadcasting live from the Co-op Radio studio today. It's been a great show. Thanks, Allison, for bringing on those amazing guests. So much to think about, and they're just so outstanding in their work, both of them. Elise, thanks for joining us today.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
And yeah, make sure to tune in next week, Friday, September 11th. I am working on a great show for you. We want to keep in touch with you online, of course. Check out animalvoices.org. There you can stream all our shows from our archive, download as podcasts. We have more information on our blog and lots of links. You can subscribe on iTunes there, and you can tune into our social media to stay in touch with what we're doing. We would like to remind you that Animal Voices is a volunteer collective, and we rotate producer duties, and there's lots of work, lots and lots of work that goes on behind the scenes and, you know, outside of this hour. We are looking for help. We are looking for, you know, passionate people who care about our mission, who care about furthering the reach of our words and speaking out on behalf of non-human beings. We want to grow our collective and make our show stronger. If you want to contribute, please do get in touch. Don't hesitate. Drop us a line. Ask us some questions. We're looking for help both on the air and behind the scenes. So we look forward to hearing from you. That's how we found some of our great past hosts, by just announcing it on the show. So there you go. We are talking to you. Please get in touch. We want to know your thoughts also. So drop us a line at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Today, we're going to close the show with a song by True Nature called Passion for Freedom. An excellent vegan band. I think all their songs were like, you know, hardcore songs that were hard to understand the lyrics, and then they made a couple albums that are more available and listenable to a more mainstream audience. We want you to stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith if you're listening to Co-op Radio Live. It's one of our favorite Co-op Radio shows. Yeah, so thanks so much for listening today to Animal Voices. And remember to be kind to the animals.
Space is better than treatment. These chains and fences need to glory.